All right, Steve, I have to, not to isolate anyone here, but I've liked that you, I haven't seen many other people do it, especially in synchromysticism, because maybe the time investment is too much, but being a person that grew up on video games, you're one of the few people that incorporates them or brings them up from time to time. So, like, have you played Metal Gear Solid before?
No, I don't think I've played that one.
Okay, then I won't bring that up, but what is, like, the pinnacle of a video game in synchromysticism for you? Has there been one in particular that really struck you?
Probably the Assassin's Creed franchise and that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's highly conspiratorial. I think.
It was about like Templaric like time travel through DNA signatures, and like that was one of the most. How could that, if a kid plays that, how could that not resonate with them on some really weird criminal, you know, primal level in their subconscious? So yeah, that one really hit home.
Yeah. And the last one I played of that was, it was either the second one or the third one. And at the end you break into the Vatican and you confront the Pope in this hidden chamber. And
sure.
Whoa, yeah. Really?
Well, you find these little pieces of Eden is what they're called. And you piece this small, puzzle together. I don't want to give cookies away, but they basically realize that the picture that they're painting from all these time travel missions and like trying to recreate those pieces of Adam is from a future culture and trying to prevent a calamity that, like, you know, ancient gods or aliens told them about would happen, but they hid all of this information around all of these Templar Garden and Freemasonic organizations much earlier than Freemasonry. But that was the premise, and that just struck a chord with me. Of course it would,
well,
you know?
That would explain the fucking the markers, right? So they actually like marked land off here long before 1492, wasn't that? You probably know about that, right? There's like these big stone with the Templar signature in them that like predate all of that shit. Like basically, it's as much proof as you need almost for this all being well known, you know.
Well, doesn't that bring it back to like a, you know, the subconscious indoctrination of like. You mean 1492, Columbus sails the ocean blue, blah, blah, blah. If you tell that to a kid enough times, you're not going to like your programming model of when America was formed is going to disregard the fact that Vikings landed in Nova Scotia like a thousand years before, stuff like that. You just won't think of that as a kid. So I just think that if we were more honest at a younger age with our children about the fact that we don't know, we don't have a certain knowing about a lot of these things, then that we'd be able to grow up less conditioned and more open-minded about a lot of stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. I hear that. You're going to be a great dad.
Oh, man. I know. Been hearing it. How come everybody might – how come all my friends are getting married and having kids now? Is that a 30s thing? In the mid-30s?
it's a little rough, yeah.
Well, I'm getting married November 15th in Palm Springs at Melody's. I guess we're doing it at Melody's grandfather's house. We're in the backyard because her dad is his health is not so great. And then I'm stoked because the honeymoon is Vietnam. We're going to Vietnam for 40 days.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think that's part of the – I mean I like – the reason why I love her so much is she gets me to go do these kind of like – things that I would never think to do for myself, you know, like these kind of adventures, these really long adventures to like know a culture and immerse yourself in a culture that's so alien to you. I guess I wouldn't do that on my own as a Gemini, be more introverted, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have a partner that pushes you like that.
Totally. Totally awesome.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That's pretty big news.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
So does that mean that we're not going to get as many videos and projects coming out here because you're all like immersed in the fucking lovey-dovey? Like, just kidding. Not,
you do you'll get some videos.
You'll get a little something in there.
You'll get
all your sync videos. All your sync videos are going to be romantic comedy mashups.
I won't lie. I there's a lot of different things that I do, you know, video editing wise, have nothing to do with synchronicity. Like I've been making videos with something called ASMR. Do you guys know what that is?
No.
Have you ever heard of ASMR?
No, it sounds pretty hip though. What is it?
It's just I have a binaural audio mic that's shaped like ears. You know what so you would get like the sensation of somebody talking in your left ear or right ear that they were walking around. You get this like kind of 3D image with it. And so I've been doing stuff, basically that are meant for sleep and relaxation and trance and hypnosis and stuff. But I'm working with people that use the, VR technology, like the Oculus Rift. So you get the 3D sound, and then you get we finally got to the point where VR equipment's getting good enough where it's very believable. Ezra and I went to this, it was like a really nerdy, like, computer programmer, like, show off thing where they only had 48 hours to create a game or whatever. And one of the guys there had an Oculus Rift, and they got to try it. And, his program was really simple. Like, I was inside of a white cube. There was like 9 sigils on each wall, and that's even below you. So if you look down, there's like 9 sigils at your feet, and everyone that you touch interacts and says a different message or sentence and stuff. And you're supposed to figure out the synchronicities between which glyphs you touch. So I realized that if you could mix that with binaural audio technology, that you can get a really immersive thing. And I guess I've been spending a lot more time doing that lately than doing sync videos, obviously, but it's something that I still want to do. I mean, I will still do sync videos. I'm very fascinated with this. Has been taking up a lot of my time.
I just read this book on like neuroplasticity, and they were talking, a small section was devoted to sort of like how your brain wires itself when subjected to certain kinds of electromagnetic noise or electromagnetic stimulation at, these imprinting stages, whether still in the womb or just briefly out of it. And it's amazing how music or just beats or whatever can synchronize with the human body and the human brain to reorganize neurons and basically change our entire filtering system. So it's part of like that program of, I guess, remaking ourselves or shielding ourselves from usual indoctrination techniques. I find it like a really fascinating tool. And that's been obviously a part of your work for a while. And I was just revisiting some of your synchromusicology videos this week. And it's all part of that, right? So it's...
Yeah, it's definitely, it's all integrated with that whole thing. And Ezra definitely wants to make more, so we will... He's coming over, I guess, next week to start working on a series that's related to his new book. So that's all going to happen too.
So is like Adam Smith's Power of Mind, is that still applicable now, or have we like moved so far beyond that type of research is just? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Surprise it, because I don't know the content of that particular book.
Oh no, he's looking at brain waves and all kinds of, runs all kinds of experiments and stuff. I found them really interesting, but then I wondered that if maybe since the time of that book, if there's been more of a strain on like what's even permitted in those realms, and like if it's like we were like allowed to have some higher degree of research in those areas, and then it was like kind of like halted a bit or
no,
what.
No, I mean, brainwave research is still pretty up there, especially like electrical stimulation. So
right, well, a lot of this was incorporating different psychoactive substances and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And doing that kind of more transpersonal psychology type experimentation stuff.
I think as far as like psychiatry and like being able to learn and map out the electrical brain and what exactly exhibits and can change a brain pattern from depressed to happy and all those things, we're going to really make some breakthroughs in the next couple of years in that, maybe next decade. But that it can be analyzed and it can be adjusted. And there's going to be a whole market of synthetic drugs that are going to have a lot less side effects than the ones that are in the market now. I think that we're learning a lot about it. Like, you know, my father is a psychiatrist, and I grew up in that kind of like world. And back then, when he was teaching me about it, like many of them weren't the best things you could put in your body. A lot of the time, that just made you dependent on something else. But I think through unlocking like the genome and learning more about our DNA and how our brain works as an electrical mechanism, that the drugs that are going to come out in the next 10 years are going to have a lot more benefits and less horrible side effects for sure. They even, I just read this really cool, post about, something that's going to make LASIK obsolete. It's like this, it's like this little implant that you could put in your eye. That's kind of like BioWare or whatever, that will make you be able to see 3x 20/20. I don't even know what that is exactly, but
oh shit, that's where things are headed.
There you go. Yeah. So like little, you know, taking technology and how can you tweak a human being and enhance their senses without making them feel like they're less of a bioorganism? That's where I think it's headed, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting.
I am a little scared how, you know, we advance, but then it's always, well, how is it going to be turned against us, I guess. So in one sense, like, it could be just a McLuhan type of thing where there's really no one in control and these things are put out into the new sphere or the social field and they help move us towards something better, or it's just a self-organizing thing. So no matter who tries to control it or use it against humanity, it's not going to really work. Like David, you bring up like LSD often in that context where MKUltra tried to use it as a weapon, but it ultimately was more of like a liberating thing. So in that sense, it's like maybe there's nothing to be afraid of in that regard.
Well, I just keep coming to how flimsy everything is. Like there's like the rituals are half revealed, half concealed, right? And like there's such a... it's just they're really like they're just really poorly put together. It seems like the mega rituals are very sloppy, and ultimately, like that going into JFK, going into 9/11, going into the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, like these things, like it feels like they're just fucking like cookie cutter. Like they're just very flimsy. Do you guys get?
Sure, Michael Schott and I have talked a number of times. I mean, you know. The Millennium Hilton Hotel, the thing that like, I actually want to drop something in here about this, but, so, right, you have that building that's literally next to the World Trade Center that you want to touch, Steve, that, which you want to put on your monkey suit and go touch this building down next to the World Trade Center. They spelled Millennium wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just like Abracadabra and the fucking Beatles.
Right. It's like when you talk about the sloppiness or the seeming sloppiness. Yeah, I totally dig that. It's like, what the fuck did you just do there?
Some Gematria shit that I haven't figured out.
Possibly, sure. But can I just – this is probably a bizarre tangent, but was – last Always Record, we were talking about, like, Planet of the Apes, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. David, you made a point about the Mark Wahlberg Planet of the Apes came out in 2001. And you said, well, of course, it's the timing of it, right? But something about, like, I've been through this rabbit hole a number of times, but something just, like, really, really hit me.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay.
Was it released before? Before 9/11 or after?
Let's find out.
Yeah.
Planet of the Apes 2001. Mark Wahlberg, Helena Bonham Carter. IMDb. Let's see. Release date July 27th, 2001. So, yeah, before.
There you go. Okay. And Helen Bonham Carter was in Fight Club and they had that whole building
construction
scene.
Right.
Yeah.
Very strange
Project
time in my
Mayhem.
Life.
Yep.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
With the sphere, the whole deal, it's all there.
Oh, that's my beeper, guys. Don't worry about that. The hell?
Oh, you also traveled back in time? Because I was going to go into some time travel shit. Now you got a beeper again?
Do you know what that was? You can call people and send people money on Facebook now. What the hell is going on? I don't want to get calls on Facebook. Like, it's so fucking weird, dude.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Sorry.
That's okay. They want to get some of that PayPal money. I mean, PayPal just used the recipe from like Superman 3 or some shit, taking a few pennies out of every transaction. And now the motherfucker's going into outer space. You know, Facebook's like, we want some of that shit. We want some of that space travel money.
Dude, speaking of Superman, there's some interesting stuff going on like lately that they just released that documentary with Nick Cage where they were not with Nick Cage, but they were going to make a movie called Superman Lives where Tim Burton. Have you ever heard
that's
of
also
that?
That's also Tim Burton. Yeah. So Planet of the Apes 2001 was Tim Burton. Yeah, I know exactly. The new documentary is like Who Killed Superman Lives?
Yeah.
The Untold. It's like some really long name. Yeah. But basically Who Killed Superman Lives?
Exactly right. And Nick Cage, like, named what, his youngest son Khalil or some shit like that after a Superman character? I don't know.
Yeah, Jor-El, one of those.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's the whole point is because, I mean, I just posted and I was just watching. I just showed my friend fucking Patrick's video on the Beatles and Superman. If you guys haven't seen it, it's like, I really recommend it. I mean, he did it a while ago, but it's so fucking good. It's all, we'll all be Magic Superman, Magic with a K. And he was looking at, you know, the director of, what is it, A Hard Day's Night, Help, How I Won the War with, John Lennon basically also directed Superman 2 and 3. And so you have this really weird connection, like, with the song also of the original Superman, you know? Not the original, but the fucking Christopher Reeves. There's two Reeves, right? The first Superman was Reeves, and then the second Superman was Reeves. Anyways, that it's the same notes in the song. So, dun, 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 dun. It's the same as Thus Spake Zarathustra from 2001. Dun, 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 dun. They're like, you know... Yeah, I mean, we've gone into this before on the show about, especially Superman 2 with the monolith and stuff as a prison, and relating that to like Supertramp's Crime of the Century and stuff, and how weird it is that Breakfast in America has the mirror image with the 9/11 coming out of the two towers with the fucking orange juice. Hello, Trading Places, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, no, it's just it's really strange.
No, man, the Superman stuff is super insane, and especially the way the direction they're going with it right now. They're doing the new one with Ben Affleck where, you know, it's Batman versus Superman. An alien descends from the sky, and he's got way too much power. He could eliminate the human race if he wants to. So in order to combat that, that's where the Justice League story starts, you know. So
right. So there seems to be something going on with fucking the dead Superman, the Doomsday Superman thing, and Funeral for a Friend.
I don't know if that I'm sorry to cut you off there, but that was like the most profound comic book I ever read. Like, I love that. The whole Doomsday saga, they made so much money with that. They like they packaged in these like secret, like, you know, I guess they were like white envelopes. They just made it look really occult and mysterious. And that was like one of the most powerful Superman stories. And he doesn't die. He like just comes back in like different incarnations of himself, you know? He
resurrects. It's the fucking, there's so much 9/11 shit with that. It's crazy. And then what really got me, I've talked about on the show before, but it really got me was, you know, I do this whole thing with, the Motown film, The Wiz. You know, and you know, in The Wiz.
The rooftops shot where the guy's wearing the Superman shirt,
thing. So, what?
In The Wiz, correct?
Someone's wearing a Superman shirt in The Wiz?
You're thinking of the Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Yeah.
Oh,
you
know, okay.
Sorry about that.
No, whatever. I mean, you know, Jake Coetzee used to point it out a lot because you got Emerald City is the two towers and they encircle the sphere and it's very ritualistic. Totally, if you wanted an argument for the sphere between the towers being symbolic of the Kaaba at Mecca, you have it with The Wiz, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just so strange, like, you know, but, where I'm going with this is that I play The Wiz with Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. I have that available on my, Google Plus thing now. I've re-uploaded it, but, when the album goes back around, the first song on the album is Funeral for a Friend, Love Lies Bleeding in My Hand. Hands. If you want to see something really trippy, it's fucking that. But then I thought it was so weird because we have this whole thing going on with like Doomsday and Superman as the Ubermensch. It's 2001. You know, this is the Overman. You know, that's the whole point. But then that it happens to be, there's like this Funeral for a Friend connection. And like, they're all patriotic, right? Like, that's their whole deal. Like, they're America.
Sure.
The Justice League, right?
And Superman's a solar deity. He's like an Atonist. He gets all his power from our sun. So.
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's why in Action Comics, I think it's worth more money than like any comic ever, right? Is like Superman throwing the fucking Volkswagen Beetle, but the Volkswagen Beetle is a symbol of the sun. He's got a yellow fucking Beetle. And you have Vav 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 666 for the VW symbol. You know, obviously we've gone into that for days, but,
That's great, David. I like that a lot.
I mean, people know that generally superficially, like when people look at the Superman throwing that Volkswagen Beetle, they see it as him throwing the Nazis because they're like, oh, there's a German car. And then you look at the context of the time and then that makes all the sense in the world. But there's a whole other level to it as like two suns in the sunset or whatever. And he's crushing the fake sun, you know?
Sure.
That reminds me. I mean, have you seen Steve, I know you're familiar with Chris Knowles.
Never heard of him. Who's he? Who's Chris?
His God's Wear Spandex. Are you familiar with the image for his Superman? Oh, boom, found it. I'm gonna drop it right here. Boom. So you could just Google our God's Wear Spandex Superman, and he makes the point that Superman is a Jewish sort of messianic figure. And it literally has, instead of this S silver symbol. It has a menorah and the Star of David on his chest, smashing the Volkswagen.
Look at that. Yeah, that's a great image.
Well, it's two Jews from Chicago. Is that right? The guys who came up with Superman?
I don't know that. I don't know the etymology of Superman. Yeah. I don't know who started it.
Yeah, it was two Jewish men, yeah.
Oh.
So who made this picture? This Superman picture?
Joseph Michael Linzer. He's a comic book artist. Like, he's like a actual legit comic artist that Chris Knowles has a working friendship relationship with and got him to do some illustrations for the book.
That's great.
Those two emblems, you know, the symbol on Superman's chest, the Star David, and the Volkswagen logo are super powerful, both of them. They have so much history, you know?
Sure.
So many different connotations.
Yeah.
And is there 42 in the license plate there, I'm seeing?
Yeah.
It's like
742. Yeah. Well, you got the scarab, right? Is generally, even though we'd say the sun, because I would equate the Vav 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 with the 666 Babylonian sun square. But then, like, beyond that, like, the scarab put in the sun, the scarab pushes the sun, right? That's the idea. So you have, like, the moon and the sun or whatever. So, yeah, right, there's definitely something going on there. Yeah, it's really trippy.
All right, so can I throw you something here? So this is what I wanted to say about the 2001 Planet of the Apes, right? I just want to drop you a few bullet point synchronicities that, like, really blew up in my mind over the last week. So both of these movies, the original Planet of the Apes is, what, 1968? It's the same year as the groundbreaking for the World Trade Center, yes?
Yes.
Also that year, like, Planet of the Apes and 2001 A Space Odyssey are released months apart, okay? Just a few months apart.
And Rosemary's Baby. Sorry, but that's not your point.
I'm specifically going to talk about these two films for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So 2001 A Space Odyssey actually has people wearing monkey costumes in the movie, right, for the Dawn of Man scene. Sure. Planet of the Apes has people in monkey costumes. Both shoot scenes of a spaceship crashing over Lake Powell in Utah. They both use the exact same landscape. Literally, both shot at the same lake in Utah. Both have the spaceship crashing over it as they're coming out of a Stargate, right? There's a series of, like, really strong parallels between the two films. Like, very, very specific little things. We've discussed this with Mike Quellen, and probably a number of other times. But point is, like, these movies are super tied in. They're released months apart. Both have monkeys. Both have Stargates. Both have spaceships crashing over Lake Powell. Blah, 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 right?
Right.
Planet of the Apes is released actually the same day Martin Luther King is shot, which not many people talk about, but
really,
that's... Yeah, right. Yeah.
Which is interesting because that is an example of a proven CIA conspiracy, because the family of King sued the American government, right? It's like one of the biggest fucking conspiracy cases or whatever. And they won.
Sure. So
family won. So that's, you know, and people don't even know that. That's evidence.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Itself.
I didn't know that either, man. Yeah.
You know, fucking hardly anybody knows that, but you can actually look at all the transcripts of the court. Sorry to interrupt, Al.
That's all right. So, okay, so we have these two movies come out, 1968, the World Trade Center groundbreaking happens, right? Then, obviously, the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, references 2001. It's like a specific year in the fucking title of the movie, right?
Sure.
So then we have the Millennium Hilton right next to the World Trade Center and that whole chain of stuff. But putting, like, the idea that someone would say, hey, we need to remake Planet of the Apes in the year 2001.
Right.
Right. So again, like, acknowledging the pairing, the original 1968, like, sort of correspondence of these two films, saying, like, we need to get a fucking movie out in 2001 to correspond, to mark this time.
To mark Wahlberg something. That time.
Yeah. But what does...
Another brick in the Wahlberg.
The change has the spaceship. Well, we were talking about that he crashes at the end of the thing by the Lincoln Monument, right? And there's this whole time travel thing. What is that evidence of? That is a political coup, right? It's like some sort of weird, like basically saying, this is the history we know. This is the American government we know. Abraham Lincoln and all your apple pie bullshit, right?
Right.
You're literally depicting an overthrow of the American government in 2001, right? By putting the monkey in place of Abraham Lincoln, and now it's the planet of the apes, not the planet of the American sheeple.
And doesn't Wahlberg and his monkey go through the Stargate or wormhole in Saturn's orbit, correct? Is that true?
That is that's what Michael said, and I believe him. Yeah, I don't.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's just like, you know, that the hexagon on Saturn just ties it back to Superman's little emblem right there. So that
right, plays into Saturn and Beyond the Infinite in the book, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's interesting. So, okay. I'm sorry. I have to go in a direction here if I'm going to say this, but it'll tie back, I promise. So I had this crazy trip out with a film called Venus in Furs and Lady Gaga's album Art Pop. And there's a whole thing, and they incorporate the two towers and all this stuff. But I just noticed the other day that around the same time, well, so 7 days after Art Pop came out, Roman Polanski produced his own Venus in Fur. So, you know, Art Pop has Venus on the cover and all this stuff, you know. And it was weird because when I saw that, it tripped me out that it's like, okay, the 7 day thing, because I just was remembering that Rosemary's Baby was released 7 days after Robert Kennedy was shot, and that Robert Kennedy had dinner with Polanski and Roman Tate the night before he died, right? But then I was also thinking, well, okay, so you know, you guys know about the crowned crystal monolith? I think I talked about it last time, but it's such a fucking trip. So the Queen of England unveiled a prop from 2001 A Space Odyssey that was never used, which is a clear monolith, and they put a crown into it. So they like, imprinted this crown. Have you guys ever seen this?
No. When did this happen? When she
so
did that?
So on June 5th, 1968. So so what? The Queen unveiled
also
it on June 5th, 1968. Okay. While the assassination had happened that same day, what would happen later on June 5th, 1977, right? So... Oh, no, strike that, reverse it. I got this wrong. So, but I do know that they're the same day. So it's the crystal monolith wasn't until 77.
What
the
assassination?
Fucking assassination. Robert Kennedy. Robert Kennedy.
Oh, okay.
Was fucking shot on the same, on the anniversary of the unveiling of the fucking, oh no, the, I'm sorry, dude. This is hard to communicate. The fucking crystal monolith was unveiled on the anniversary of the assassination. But you have 1968 and 1977. So it was unveiled in 1977. The fucking assassination happened in 1968, right?
Oh, gotcha.
69. Okay. I think Robert Kennedy's 69, but go on.
That's kind of crucial to the sink, but, when was Robert Kennedy killed? Let's find that out.
Sorry, June 6th, 1968.
Yeah, June 6th, 1968. I'll be right back, gentlemen. I'll just use the restroom. I'll be back.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I thought it was interesting that you have this 1968-1977 thing happening between something that's related to 2001 A Space Odyssey, which came out right at the same time as Rosemary's Baby, right? Thereabouts. And so, but then 1977 was when The Haunting of Julia came out, which for all intents and purposes is like the sequel to Rosemary's Baby, beyond like whatever happened to Rosemary's Baby, which happens to star Patty Duke from fucking Valley of the Dolls, you know? But yeah, it's just full circle is David Bowman and Mia Farrow, right? And Rosemary, right? So you have Cure Delay, Rosemary, 1977. But the thing is that fucking drives the whole thing home is that the release dates for Full Circle, the film went around the world in releasing in one place after another, but it started, its first release was on September 11th, 1977, and it went until September 11th, 1981. And so Full Circle literally starts with the September 11th and ends with a September 11th. I've talked about that before here, but in regard to like relating that to the fucking crystal monolith, I don't know. It really tripped me out.
That's crazy.
And I've documented so many 77s in the JFK assassination that it's kind of absurd, actually. So to have the 77 connected to the killing of his brother is pretty fascinating, actually.
Right? Yeah, I'm surprised. That's not even I'm surprised you haven't gotten into that before. So, okay, so the Silver Jubilee Crystal Crown was sculpted on this site by Arthur Fleischman, KCSGFRBSMD, who pioneered carving in perspex. The block measures 10.9 by 5.9 by 8, thick, weighs 2 tons. It is the largest solid block of acrylic in the world. It was originally made in 1968 for Stanley Kubrick's film 2001: A Space Odyssey, but was rejected by the director in favor of the now famous black basalt monolith. Her Majesty the Queen unveiled the sculpture on June 5th, 1977. Pretty weird.
I caught the tail end of that. That sounded insanely bizarre. They were going to use it, and then Kubrick rejected it?
Yeah, and that it's the largest solid block of acrylic in the world.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And it's like, the thing is that I get from it is that it almost seems like it's just there for fucking symbolic purposes. Like, I wonder the validity of like, if that was even meant to like be in the film. Like, is this just for this kind of deal? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. The thing is, I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, it's just,
well, and the thought forms of when you think of the Queen of England and everything that stirs with that. I mean, Jesus.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, because I mean, these monkeys contacted by this higher intelligence, and then the whole Nephilim, royal family myths. You know, it's pretty connected there.
What the fuck, right?
Some people still are oblivious that there's dynastic monarchies. You know, families that run America. They think that that's not coincidental. You know, that's just strange to me.
I mean, it's strange that no one even thinks that it's weird that we still, like, put the royal family on taboos and shit. Like, we even celebrate them as anything.
Like, yeah.
Even as figureheads. Right. What is going on there? Just as a symbolic gesture, we should be like, fuck you. All the money you have is illegitimate. Fuck you.
I know. It's like, if I hung out with, like, David and he was just, like, wearing, like, you know, the fanciest, like, designer clothes ever, and he had a crown and, like, slippers and stuff. Like, you got to tone that down, bro. What's up with that?
It's by itself it's strange. And then, yeah, when you deconstruct, it's like, oh, they actually do have these, you know, so many political decisions boil down nowadays to, like, social connections. And so to say that the monarchy or anybody wouldn't have any power anymore is so fallacious, because these people are part of cliques that we don't even know exist. They're taking their cues from their social group. We are not their social group. We are not their... we are... I don't know. There's this disconnect. I think people want to believe that, okay, these people are our public servants and that everything is going according to how it's laid out in the Constitution, whatever the fuck that is, and so on and so forth. But, right... And then, of course, the tops of, like, the biggest multinational corporations are sort of like a new economic aristocracy, even though they don't wear the same accoutrement. They're still, as far as, like, power goes, it's the same thing. We're living under a neo-feudal type system, and no one even gets it. We want to pretend it's okay. Because, I don't know, it's like the technology is sort of, as much as I want, I side with McLuhan that technology is not necessarily a bad thing, that it is actually creating sort of this sort of, like, neo-pagan sense of the world, a holistic neural mapping. At the same time, it's distracting as fuck.
Well, I mean, the Vatican's always seemed pretty paganistic to me in the way that they just dress and the way that that whole, you know, microstate works. And it's like, you know, the three heads of the same snake or whatever. You have the Vatican as the religious branch. You have the Church of England, or the Bank of England, that's the financial branch. And you have the Pentagon, that's like this literal kind of satanic military branch, and they all kind of work together in congruence, you know?
And what's hilarious is the Vatican is built on a former temple for Mithra, who was the forerunner to Christ. Who's this, you know, it's, but of course the Christian apologetics people will just say, well, of course, Satan put Mithra in the historical record to trick us, or he put Osiris in the record, or Horus to trick us, you know. It's a satanic trick. But the, so it's especially ironic that that's even there. And of course, like, Vatica is a hallucinogenic wine. So we're built on Vatican Hill, which is just a nod to that all religions are built on psychedelic communion and revelation, whether it's purely subjective and hallucinatory and there's nothing to it, or it actually is connecting us to the universe as we want to understand it as sort of a sentient being. I don't know. But all these hints are there. It's like hidden. It is hidden in plain sight.
This is why I was giving a hard time before about, or, you know, playing devil's advocate with David, which is a fun game to play with you, David. but, you know, it's like I will forever be a conspiracy theorist / conspiracy realist because of these simple facts that, like, it is fucking undeniable how goddamn controlled, you know, when we talk about six media companies, political dynasties, the fact that you could have a fucking Clinton and a Bush running for president right now with conspiracy culture as popular as it is. And, you know, it shows that it's not even making a fucking scratch, because the average person walking down the street is like, ah, Republican stole my healthcare. And then the other guy is like, ah, Democrat stole my, you know, Jesus sticker or whatever. I don't know. Whatever the fuck it is. Yeah, you know, whatever.
This came up kind of recently with stuff I do with rents. I talked to this guy who lived in grew up in Little Rock and knew the Clintons, or knew Bill, I guess. But, you know, he talked to Hillary. He's basically friends with Bill. And Bill, like, loathed her from the very beginning, even after they, like, first got married. Like, it was just apparent. He would just go to her events and be supportive because they were, like, this power couple, this unit. Kind of like, you guys ever see House of Cards? Have you ever watched that TV show, House of Cards?
I haven't seen it.
With Kevin Spacey?
I have, but the premise is pretty basic, right? It's like, even the arranged marriage of, just for the sake of appearances.
Right. I guess I brought that up because in the last season, they didn't even try to hide it. They were just trying to mimic and parody, like, politics and government, what's going on right now. They had a guy that looked like Putin. They had the whole, like, Ukraine, you know, conflict in there. And instead of Obama, it was Kevin Spacey. So, what I was going to say, though, is that, that there could be, like, if $1 billion literally run, like, a pile of money ran for president, they'd probably win, because one of the reasons that Bill stayed with Hillary is because she was – the Rodhams are connected with Capone and the Chicago Crime Syndicate, and that's a lot where their money comes from. They don't have quite as much money as the Bushes do, but it becomes very dynastic when you do just have, like, Obama-Bush, you know, Clinton-Bush-Clinton-Obama-Obama-Bush-Clinton, like – people don't realize that is a powerful family bloodline situation. I don't know how that they don't realize that yet. You know, it's an enigma to me.
Right.
It's what's willful ignorance. It's comforting to think that's not what's going on. So people believe whatever they want to believe.
Right. So I was just looking here just to clarify. Robert Kennedy died on June 6th, but was shot 26 hours before, which was on June 5th, so 1977. So, I mean 1968, sorry. I keep jumping back and forth between the crowning of the Silver Jubilee thing and Kennedy. But yeah, it's fucking weird, huh? That connection. It's very strange.
Okay. On the Hillary Clinton tip of things, have any of you guys seen that YouTube video of I think it's her participating in an award ceremony for Walter Cronkite from the World Federalist Association?
No.
It's really weird, man. Basically, it's like the World Federalist Association is this, like, apparently just very upfront world federal government movement, you know, and they're talking about how this, you know, global government is the the future of humanity and how Walter Cronkite's work has helped. Well, specifically, he was doing some kind of genocide coverage and, you know, human rights work. So they're celebrating that. But this idea of world government comes up as they're celebrating his journalism and stuff. And I think it's Cronkite who says himself at one point that it's going to be difficult to, like, have people surrender their sovereignty as we work for this world government, you know? And he's like, he quotes like Alexander Hamilton or something, in relation to the colonies and how certain colonies had to give up the idea of their, you know, sovereignty for the American vision. And, yeah, they're all just kind of talking about this world government thing that they're going to impose. And then, like, Hillary, right before she gets on to, like, congratulate him, Cronkite says about another politician that this other politician thinks that we can't try to have a new world order. I think he says new world order, until the Messiah comes, because surely any other attempt at a world government before the Messiah would be the work of the devil. And then Cronkite says, well, I'm glad to sit right here with you all at the right hand of Satan. And then he introduces Hillary Clinton.
Shit. Yeah, let's look. I want to look that. That's awesome.
Oh, dude,
man.
It's such a, it looks like it's out of a, like, cyberpunk dystopian, you know, 80s movie. Like,
so I tripped and fell over Walter Cronkite's briefcase at an airport when I was a kid. And my family, we were running to catch a plane. And, like, he had the cameras and was doing this whole thing. And he had his briefcase turned into the walkway, and I was running with my parents, and I just, like, fucking fell, and he gave me a dirty look. And I remember, because I remember the moment of, like, looking up at this old guy who's, like, got all these people around him, you know, and he gave me this, like, really, like, fuck you kind of look. So I don't know.
Did you see his snake eyes?
No, I don't know why you give a dirty look to a kid for fucking falling over your briefcase. Like, that was just, like, the sign of a very cold human being, you know what I mean?
Really? You've never been in a like, a somewhere, you know, you're in the store and some screaming kid comes running down the aisle and knocks over your shit and you're like,
I wasn't screaming, you know.
Of course, I'm sure you were a very well-behaved child, but yeah. Listen, I'm not trying to sympathize with Cronkite's satanic.
You
want to
side with Cronkite on this one? That's your business. I'm just telling you what happened.
David, I'm just saying, I've met you, you know, and, you know, you're okay. A little high energy. You might have, if you knocked over my briefcase, I might be a little upset.
All right. Well, now I know what you would do for Cronkite Bar.
What if maybe his briefcase was like the briefcase from Fear and Loathing? Like, maybe there was vials of LSD in there and you were smashing them and he was like
what are you, a fucking narcotic agent?
Yeah, Cronkite was tripping balls and he's like, this little fucking kid's trying to narc on me in the middle of fucking security, airport security.
That's my favorite version of the story, that Cronkite was tripping balls and he, like, saw David and was like, whoa, this is a younger version of myself. And he's acting like a dick, and he knocked over my suitcase.
I hadn't seen that one of Cronkite, but I saw a more conservative one of him being awarded shit at the Council of Foreign Relations, which is tying back into the Anglo-American establishment. That is one of their, of course, lineage institutions that still influences all.
It's like Babel. It's like Babel, right? That the structure.
Tower of Babel.
Yeah. Isn't the structure modeled after the, like...
It's
fucking weird,
right? Yeah, if you just Google, like, Walter Cronkite and Satan, I think it'll come up, that video. Naturally, you know.
And what's cool or interesting or sick, depending on how you think, but Cecil Rhodes of the Rhodes Scholarship fame, you know, all these, like, I mean, he left his entire fortune to the perpetuation of the Anglo-American establishment. It was, like, in his will or his last will and testament or something. And this goes down to that whole premise of, well, you provide scholarships to, like, even the best lower classes so that the lower classes will never have the leadership necessary to pull themselves out of their destitution and ignorance. So Obama, right? Like, he obviously he wasn't I don't know what his bloodlines are. There's all kinds of speculations, right? But I tell
you, yeah, no, we know what his bloodlines are to a degree.
No,
yeah, we do. I mean, we know that we can go through what is it with every president was related to that one king, except for two. I'm sure you know about this, Will.
I mean, think about where that information's coming from. That's BS. I mean, I think it's all air. But as far as that goes, it's just to finish my point. It's like, well, so let's just say that he was from like lower social class and brought him up, and now he's one of them, and it's like we would never benefit from leadership or something.
Who is it? It was the one from when Robin Hood was supposed to be based on, right? So like who was the king at the time who was like off at the Crusades?
King John? No, Richard, right?
Was it Richard? Okay, because I think that every president except for two has been proven to be blood related to that king. You never heard that?
No, I've heard genealogical ties, right? But what
that's
is
the one. I mean, that's
like you're taking what one or two people that saying I'm an authority. These things, I feel like I need some sort of statistic.
No, I mean, this has been shown by like a whole bunch of different people over time. I mean, this is something that crops up again and again independently from people.
Maybe. What are the sources that they keep?
No, I just I saw that there was like a young girl who had done a presentation on it in school, and her grandfather helped her or whatever. And I got curious when I read that article, and I was like, that can't be the only time that fucking somebody put that together. And yeah, I found a few independent sources from different places that they came to the same deal.
Well, I know that. Well, at least I believe that like the Bushes were descended from like William of Orange, for example, these sorts of characters. So. I think that a lot of these have been tracked and so on and so forth. So Obama, I don't want to dwell on that because that's not what I was getting. But the point is, your point's taken and I'm not like completely disagreeing with you. I just think that a lot of like political noise has been generated on Obama, like the birthers and these sorts of people, and they're not dependable at all. And that just creates like, I don't know. People pick that up as like it's reliable. Like, look what Red Ice does. They just take feeds from fucking these conservative corporatist outlets and pretend that it's news. In the same way, like the conspiracy crowd is susceptible to the same thing. It's like, oh, are the corporatist Republicans telling you what you want to hear? Are we going to pick that up as real, genuine, historical reporting? I think that's nonsense.
Uh huh.
So I think we have to be careful and discerning and know exactly where it's coming from. So it's like, yeah, a number of people have done it, but are they just keep drawing on each other, just reinforcing the same feedback loop? I don't know.
Yeah, from what I was gathering, it seemed like no. It seemed like they were actually, because you can do genealogy stuff, and the presidents are easier to do that with than a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. This was like, you know, standard genealogy maneuvers, and they all happen, except for like two or whatever. They all related to, I think it's King Richard. I don't know.
Hmm.
Fucking weird. I don't know. What's great about that we're doing a radio show is that like I can say this shit, and I'd be happy to take it back if I get proven otherwise, you know. But it's like, if people are in a position where they can, if I say something or anyone says something, they can fucking look it up. That's a you know, age we're living in. Then they can kind of decipher what the source is and whatever, you know. But I mean, all I'm talking from is a place where I actually like bothered to try and figure something out to whatever degree I was capable, which isn't the highest degree, admittedly, you know. But internet's challenging in that way.
This gets back to the first point of the conversation we had. It's like, well, what can we know about the cosmos, or what can we know about this or not? And we're just groping and trying what we can and piecing these sort of narratives together as best we can. And as long as you're trying to maintain a certain level of integrity and not indulging whatever you want to believe versus what is reality or whatever reality is, it's just, it's a mind fuck for sure. And, but I mean, the long term, it's just like, it goes back to like, how are we to get back to Cronkite and stuff? And it's just these figures and, what game they're actually playing or who they're actually beholden to. And even like the Hillary insignia for president, right? It's just the Twin Towers with a fucking plane running through it. I mean, whatever Spin Master came up with that symbol is clearly playing on people's like fears and anxieties.
Oh,
about
no fucking way. I'm sorry. I just happened to be looking up the original source of my thing before I look at other examples, but it was this 12-year-old girl who came up, who basically was like, okay, except for Martin Van Buren, they're all related to the same guy. but she went to my fucking high school. So like, or actually my junior high. So, Monta Vista Christian School in Watsonville, California, the girl who did that, we happened to have gone, I got expelled from there. But she, the girl who popularized this idea recently again, she went to the same school I went to. I'm just realizing this now. It just kind of tripped me out of all the schools. I'm referencing it. And she ha- we happened to have gone.
No, it's weird.
Yeah. So yeah, I can send this to you. But yeah, no, this in and of itself spoke volumes. But then it was, after the fact that I was like, okay, what the fuck? I'm trying to send a link here.
So Steve.
Yes, sir.
You still there?
Yes, I am. I'm actually looking at the genealogy of like all the presidents. I've been on it right now. Like, King John of England, like, and all these original presidents were like the best thing they brought to the United States was masonry, like George Washington. And when I was just thinking about how psychedelic it was. So when you, I think Obama stopped the tours, last year or something like that. My, Mel was actually trying to get the job to repair the White House carpet and she almost did. So, I was really stoked because I would have been able to see the whole dome and the apotheosis of George Washington, which is like, you know, a man becoming a god. And it all this stuff just makes me think of what America was founded on and how the principles of like an Atlantean civilization, America being that new Atlantis, the whole idea was to like get this whole country to the point of being able to accept some kind of deification or reunification with the deity. What would that take? It would take somebody that was that we would deify, you know what I mean? Like a Christ-like figure, a leader, a president in that respect. I wonder if that was the original goal and that's the end plan as well, you know?
Yeah.
But you asked, I mean, you go ahead with your question. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, I like that. I mean, that's a fascinating sort of rabbit hole. I think, I can't get around the idea that I know we've discussed this. And all right, here's a question for you guys. I'm trying to sort of. There's dialectics in a divisive form, you know, that sometimes dialectics are promoted as a way of making everything into black and white. You know, it's really simple. Are you a Republican? You Democrat? You know, Steve, I've heard you talk many times being trapped in dualistic thinking and trying to escape dualistic thinking, right?
Sure.
But, and so maybe I'm trapped in it, but I can't help but see that like, every symbol, particularly the symbols that we talk about, or that are used publicly, each symbol seems to embody its opposite within it, right? And by that I would mean, modern example, Confederate flag. Is it a symbol of oppression or a symbol of rebellion from the oppression, right? You rebelling from the Northern Empire, blah blah blah, or is it the oppression of the races, right? Mm-hmm. We have like I was making jokes for the last year about Kyle Hunt saying he used to do the rainbow alphabet. And then he flipped over to be about white supremacy. And I said, you look at like even the cover of the Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. It's your classic prism example. On one side, you have the rainbow. On one side, you have the pure white, right? Mm-hmm. But then even now we see this story of like, okay, gay marriage, controversy / celebrations up at odds with Confederate flag controversy / celebration. You see what I'm saying? So like this, again, is it the white orthodoxy or the rainbow, the sort of, new sheriff in town that the rainbow sheriff. So are they sort of, holding in each other their sort of potential, their opposite, right? Now these are just using, modern examples or like, news item examples, but we could see this in, right? I was just reading an article from Chris Knowles, you know, he's talking about Pluto as the symbol of death and how NASA is so death obsessed and blah, blah, blah. And I, the whole time I was reading the article, I couldn't help but wonder, like, why is no one mentioning, and I mean, it was a fantastic article. I don't want to take away from it saying, no, I didn't see any mention of the fact that Pluto, the actual etymology, the actual meaning of the word Pluto is riches and wealth. So it's not like, you know, desolation and death. It's richness and wealth. So Pluto is the aspect of Hades that is the god of financial success. So to have this at the same time, like while the Greek economy is in the news, to have us flying by Pluto, you know, seems part right. of the same ritual, right?
Right. Hades gonna hate.
I like that.
Well, a lot of the articles that have been focusing on the Pluto pictures recently, they focus on the heart image. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really, you don't really relate that with death too much when you see a heart. You're like, oh, Pluto, it's a planet again. We love you. And like, maybe that does correspond with like sort of like the different memes that are going on with the Confederate flag and the rainbow flag as well. I mean, so the symbol of death is being represented with love and acceptance. So that could be a tiny subconscious meme. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but you could see any kind of formation on a planet and think what you want from it, just like an ink blot. But people have been focusing on that. It's a heart. You've certainly heard that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's right. And even that I can see you could tell me that. What you just said is that people now looking at death with acceptance, or if I wanted to spin that from a conspiratorial perspective, I would say, oh, the NASA Masonic sorcerers are making you love death, right? they're the death eaters and they want you to love it.
I think you just described the how you create a conspiracy, and it's our minds right. can go there very quickly because it's the shortest distance between two points. Like, if we see something aesthetically and we're visual learners, that can trigger us at a very, very primal level. And that's how a conspiracy can get started. Because if you can get, you know, 100 people or 1,000 people to agree with you, then it's a thing. It's more than just aesthetics. It's like a combined consciousness act, an agreement.
Right. It's the consensus that yeah. gives it its solidity. Yeah.
Sure. So maybe that's what the basis of most conspiracies are, is like, how could this not mean something? It's perfectly obvious. That's a heart, you know? Some weird space dust on a planet that we're not even sure is a planet that's out there somewhere is a heart.
Right. Well, there's like this value thing in turn. Everything is so dulled down that it's like if something were that big, if something could affect that much in any example. I mean, I'm being vague because you can apply this everywhere. Something can't be that fucking big. Like something can't be that, you know, like everything yeah. is like we're conditioned into live in a box, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And you see some of the things that like Neil Armstrong or some of these astronauts that have been, you know, on the moon or close to the moon or whatever say now. And when they say some really far out there shit, like when he was talking about the moons of Mars or whatever, there being a monolith on Phobos, like, how does that work with the model that we have, like that the Earth is a globe and we have the system involved, and then there's this man who's been to the moon saying there's an object on some fucking distant planet somewhere that has an artificial structure that's inexplainable? They like glaze over that in pop culture. Like, so, just like, so oh yeah, that's Steve, very interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
I got a question for you in particular. Do you know what that object, what the deal is? Like, so the first picture we ever took from space, or, you know, in space, was like this structure that was like floating out there that we didn't know what the fuck it was. It's like a geometrical figure. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The first photograph we've ever taken of an outside
that's
object?
That's what I heard, yeah.
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
First photograph of what?
This thing that's just like fucking been floating in space for fucking ever that we don't know what the fuck it is.
Are you talking about the Black Knight satellite?
Well, I mean, what the heck? Is that what they call it? I mean, I don't know what they call it. I just
might be, yeah.
I just know that that's like a real thing, supposedly.
Yeah, I'll fill you guys in. There's a conspiracy called the Black Knight satellite. I'm not sure if that's what David is implying or not. It's the only object that supposedly was a satellite that had a polar orbit, which is something really hard to do that we've only really been able to do since the late 80s, I guess. But this thing was supposedly out there for a lot longer than that. It's been photographed from the ISS or whatever the fuck, you know, the space station, and it looks bizarre as hell. And it wraps around the North and Southern Pole. And that was one of the first things that the military studied, because they didn't know what it was or who put it out there. So right. It's a total conspiracy. The photos of it are bizarre as hell, but I mean, that's all we have to go on it. Just
right. We don't have hardly anything. Yeah, that's or anything at all, really.
Right. Right.
So, but the fact that there's like a geometrical straight lines thing in space that was there before we've ever been there.
No, precisely. Exactly.
That we know of. That we're supposed to know of. And so, yeah, that was a total mind fuck. Yeah.
It is, man. And the tip of the iceberg with that stuff, man. There's so much of it.
Hmm. Yeah. Tell us what it means, Steve. I know you got it.
Well,
come on.
Can I go back to my question real quick? I mean, it's a totally rhetorical question, but so I'm trying to sort of make peace in my mind with, I understand the dangers of dialectics and the fact that they're sort of foisted upon us. And yet I can't help but see sort of each symbol sort of containing a sort of, in potential duality. And I'm sort of just curious to hear your thoughts on, do you sort of still see a goal being a total release of dualistic thinking, or is that just one of many sort of filters through which to look at the world, you know?
Well, I mean, philosophically, that's just like the God with the amnesia thing, that we're dreaming within this larger organic being, and that the whole point of life is not happiness, it's to achieve union with that, or union with the place within ourselves where all of this would make sense again, and we don't have to choose between black and white and left and right. And like, I even see like some of the press about black holes lately being flipped around into a more positive light, that the centers are not an area of complete destruction where light cannot escape, that they're basically birthing factories, like a womb of space, and they just pump out more life other in other areas of the universe. That's becoming like a more accepted model. And a black hole is a good example, because dualistically, that's where all the laws of physics and science are broken at that point. When we can't see beyond the event horizon is achieving union, because you're exiting a plane that has mortality, life and death, and cycles. So maybe that's cyclical in a way, but you're exiting the cycle that you're in. And
or we're just going to find all our missing left socks. Go on, sir.
That happens a lot in my household, man. I don't know where all my socks are. But the mystery of that, and trying to piece together, are we like dreaming in this ultimate reality, and we're just trying to find the way back towards the peace of union with everything? Is that the ultimate goal, or is it a simulation? Is it less organic? That's what I struggle with sometimes, like the Gnostic theory of archonic things taking, you know, nefarious routes and feeding off our energy and that kind of thing. And and there is no escape. Is it a closed system or an open system? And we started the radio show talking about like flat earth theory versus globe theory and stuff. So it definitely is in the minds of people of whether or not we are in a quarantine or if it's an open system. And that's a big difference. It's a big difference to, you know, conscious people on the planet, whether or not we have the ability to escape the construct that we're in, be it digital or organic or analog. You know, we don't know what it is exactly. And that's one of the biggest.
We don't even know if escape is the goal.
Yeah, that's true too, Alan. You're right.
Dude, that's really fucking weird. I was just the way that you were reminding me of what you'd said earlier about like, what was it, the South Pole or whatever. You're talking about like, you know,
they're long, not being complete pictures of.
Yeah, this idea, the Truman Show thing of like, don't go near the water, you know, like trying to freak people out. That's the fucking forbidden zone in Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that you could almost take a parallel of the forbidden zone and the Stargate as moving to the projector. So like, you know, the idea that the two dimensional, like the monolith, you're relating to some, like the whole dimensionality thing, where it's like we're living within a dimension, and the whole point of Thus Spake Zarathustra and what constitutes the Ubermesh is moving into another set of dimensions, you know, like we exist within the cube. And so, but basically like the touching of the screen, moving beyond that, like we've gone into this. That was the basis of Joe's recent video, which was incredible, by the way. I don't know if you guys saw that. If everybody saw that, but holy shit. But yeah, I could see that as like the forbidden zone of like, oh, you, to go Jupiter and beyond the infinite could be taken as the same thing. It's like, well, what's on the other side of that? Oh, your actual history, you know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of fear porn in movies and stuff that would dissuade a lot of people from researching things like a Tesseract or you know, a Hypercube, like Hellraiser, Transformers, all these movies that like the government has to have complete lockdown over the cube because the cube holds all secrets and blah blah blah. And Hellraiser is literally opening gateways to hell where demons could torment you forever or whatever.
Sure, sure. It's related so to the Tefillin cube.
Yeah, so I always Shadot get means
demon or the shed or shade.
Sure. I always get suspicious when the meme of those kinds of things, like unlocking hyperdimensional cubes or like learning about if we were Flatlanders, learning about what that next dimension is, or if we were like Truman, learning how to get out of the fucking ocean and like get out of the dome, mm-hmm. or if we were like Dark City and we, you know, we're trapped by these like entities that were smart enough to encapsulate us and make us forget over and over again. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, when I see that over and over again as a meme in all of our media, I always wonder why they want people to be afraid of that. In the same way, you could look at the alien phenomenon and the Superman phenomenon and stuff. And mm-hmm. that, like I mentioned before, now that the Justice League story is going to start, it's going to be like, we shouldn't trust the aliens. Like, this guy's got a lot of power. We should get rid of the other. The, right. You know, as probably Kotze would say, being afraid of otherness, not accepting otherness and like, you can get very Jungian psychology about that, but if it's literal, then that also has a lot of different connotations about where our species is heading, you know?
Sure, if it's lateral, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literal, lateral.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Right, so, you know, if sort of the union of the opposites still acknowledges the opposites, right?
Sure.
Just not in opposition, right? If the opposites aren't opposition, are they still opposites? Like if the conflict is contrast,
yeah.
Are you looking at a polarity or are you looking at a duality, right?
And why do you think And why do you think the image of Baphomet is so threatening to a lot of people? Never mind their Christian upbringing, but he embodies that androgynous combining of both halves, you know? It's hard for people to accept.
Why are you going to say he embodies?
I did say that, didn't I?
You did say that. You're so fucking dualistic.
I'm so conditioned is what I am.
So I had this whole thing.
Dude's got boobs.
You guys notice like He-Man and She-Ra and how you could take like He-Man as Hey-Man, Hey being like the Hey's in Tetragrammaton are female, right? It's like female man, even though he's all muscular, effect or whatever, by the power of Grayskull. But then you have She-Ra is a She-Male. Because Ra, you know, sun god, you know.
Sure.
I don't know. I was thinking about that recently.
You guys remember Thundercats? That show, the cartoon Thundercats?
Absolutely.
That was like one of the first indoctrinations of like Atenism and like the how Egypt has shaped cultures from its inception and how we still adopt all their policies. Like that really got under my skin and like in my brain as a kid. Like Mumra and like summoning the power of the monoliths and the Egyptian pyramids to become like this overlord god. It was super powerful.
Snarf. It's my favorite.
Did you guys ever see Captain EO in like Disney World? Captain EO, the Michael Jackson 3D movie.
Oh yeah, I love that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin's all over that.
Oh yeah. You made a movie about that movie, right, Kevin?
You did?
Yeah, I think in Film a Thin Skin or Membrane part like 2 or 3. And then there's another one about Michael Jackson and the Antikorana. Yeah, I mean that movie is so Kabbalistic and just like tripped out. I love it.
It was totally and they had it at Epcot Center and I lived in Florida at the time, so it was like Disney World where they had the big Buckminster Fuller like geodesic dome where you'd go through and it was you would basically trace humanity from our alleged history of like caveman to modern day in this gigantic sphere. And Captain EO was like right next door. And the story of Captain EO is like this. I don't even, maybe you could do it better than justice than I can, Kevin. Can you explain Captain EO a little bit?
Oh yeah. Basically it's like, it's so perfect. It's just like Michael Jackson is this dude who I guess like is kind of this intergalactic hero of sorts. And he's like flying around with this, alien animal creatures, and the movie is actually made by like George Lucas and I think Francis Coppola too, or I'm at least Lucas, I'm certain of, but Michael Jackson flies into this planet because he understands that there's this dark queen keeping the planet from having light and color. So Michael Jackson
just interject, like, that is, she represented, like, don't go beyond duality. She was like the gatekeeper, kind of like in Ghostbusters, the same kind of deal. The gatekeeper getting to the singularity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And the amazing thing is, instead of defeating her, this is what in my video I found like pretty profound, is it's basically Michael Jackson traveling up the middle pillar of the Tree of Life. You know, if the Earth is a black planet, you know, without the sun, you know. So it's kind of like Michael Jackson. It represents the light arriving on this dark planet ruled by this dark queen, like this feminine goddess kind of entity, this dark horrors of the anima, you know, in a Jungian kind of way. And so he, you know, he meets the goddess, and instead of destroying her, killing her in the common, like, good versus bad duality sense, he brings the light and transforms her into this beautiful high priestess. And if you follow the film with the tarot cards that line the middle pillar of the Tree of Life, you see Michael Jackson meet the dark queen. And if you look at the tarot card for Sagittarius, it's the art tarot card in the Thoth deck, which is this, it's the goddess Diana with a black and white face, and she's working over a cauldron with a big rainbow behind her, and it says vitriol. But essentially the card is about light splitting into duality, and that's what Sagittarius even has to do with too. But so you see this tarot card on the middle pillar of the Tree of Life, where you confront this black and white moon goddess Diana. In Captain EO, Michael Jackson confronts the dark queen of the planet, and it turns out it's Angelica Houston, who plays the goddess Diana in another movie called The Mists of Avalon. It's like living Kabbalistic thought forms, like, you know, on the screen. And amazing. Yeah. So instead of like defeating her in that dualistic sense, I thought it was beautiful. And like you pointed out, Steve, that there's this unification that happens. Like, he brings the planet to life, and all of her cliffotic, you know, demon servants are also all transformed into light beings too. And it's like beautiful stuff. And Michael Jackson's wearing a rainbow t-shirt, which, like, you know, entrains with his whole career's connection to light and stuff like that, and color. But yeah, I'm sorry to go back to where you were taking that, Steve. I just
no, man, that was that was way better than I could describe it. That was awesome. I was just gonna say that, like, you know, when I got a little older, I thought that, like, even though Michael Jackson was the hero of that story and transformed that world and, like, took the evil queen and transformed her into this beautiful goddess, that he was like a Luciferian figure in some ways. And I think that, like, a lot of these, like, secret society types, like, the way that they view, like, messianic figures and saviors are like that. They're like the most unexpected, someone that you wouldn't think that was going to come through and bring the light.
The rebel.
Yeah, right. The rebel, exactly. So it's like a flipping of polarities, right? Because we're taught to think that Luciferic energies are negative energies, but
it's a total flipping because I wonder how much I was, you know, people talk about Disney brainwashing. I saw Captain EO as a child, promptly forgot all the fuck about it. You know, musical dancing, you know, people in rainbow outfits. I didn't fucking care. But when I wrote Look at All the Happy Creatures, the main villain is a woman named Diana, who they have to transform into this, like, positive version of herself. It's exactly, you know, and I was like, dude, I saw your video after I wrote my book, and I was like, oh my God, did I fucking rewrite Captain E? Like, what the fuck did I do? Right. but what I want to sort of stress here, and again, not for the sake of, like, having a horse in the race or a position I'm trying to push, but to say, Steve, when you say, is it Luciferian? Is it, it's a flip of the polarity. I think it takes a certain hubris. Sometimes, you know, we made this joke about Walter Cronkite. I mean, in his mind, he's probably doing something good, right? They don't think that they are destroying the world, that they are these evil empire. They think, hey, here's a fucked up situation. if only we could bring our light and our intellect and our reasoning to this scenario, we could improve it. And unfortunately, we have to bring our light to this dark world. Right? But meanwhile, us on the receiving end, we're like, yo, motherfuckers, hold up, you dark pieces of shit. We got the light. Right? And we want to bring our light to their dark New World Order or whatever.
Well, and precisely. It's justification of a smaller number of people trying to do something that they think will better the world and not giving anybody else a say or a choice in it. That could seem unfair when there's 7 billion people on the planet, 8 billion people on the planet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally. But I guess I'm just saying, even in the Captain EO story, like, you know, the Captain EO story obviously makes it more explicit and, you know, okay, she's definitely more evil and he's definitely less evil. But these are, again, still way relative terms in that the hubris required to say we have the moment at which you think, I am going to transform this person into a better version of themselves implies that you know better. It's like when people get into relationships and they're like, yeah, okay, so he cheats on me and, you know, he does whatever, but I'm going to make him, you know, it's the same idea, right? But it's the male version of that doing this with this sort of moon goddess going, well, okay, she's dark and she's about death and darkness, but, you know, we're actually going to transform her. We're going to paint a heart on Pluto and be like, actually, this is all good.
And there's one more aspect to that, Alan. You nailed it, but like, there's just one more thing. It's sort of the Gollum philosophy in Lord of the Rings. It's like, you're trying to remind somebody that is acting out what you would consider evil or what people would agree upon as evil, and letting them know that they were not always like that, that they were not that being to begin with. And they just have to revert and regress back to the time where that evil didn't exist, or at least get to the point where the river split, you know?
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd like to, I mean, I think I just want to throw out there too, that in terms of like all this, the kind of the balance that we've been focusing on, you know, talking about all these matters, is that like, I really do assume and have seen that there is a lot of virtue in the Masonic vision of America, you know, and these conspiracies, you know. And I think it's one of those things too, where we are coming full circle and the polarities are flipping. And like, you know, even myself, like the more I studied Freemasonry, the more I looked at history, I realized like, whoa, these are the badass dudes that decided to try to change some things, you know, underneath the power of the monarchy and the church and the state. And they had a vision that they wanted to see made reality, you know, I guess that's something I want to point out, is that I think the big thing going on here is that is like, there is virtue, there is vision, there is all this stuff at work, but then there's also that side, like, out of like, but you can't impose that vision, you know? And I think that's where the shadow of the virtue comes out in these groups, you know? And so like, as we're talking about all these different, you know, large masses of conspirators or, you know, group consciousnesses that have concerted efforts on the planet, like, I'm sure some people really think they're doing the good and the right thing, you know? It's not quite as evil and nefarious as we might assume. But then there are those motherfuckers in the Pentagon and in the military, in the, you know, the black dark corners of shit that are like willing to do the dark things and willing to embody that shadow of virtue, you know? So, I don't know. I just felt like throwing that out there in the mix, you know, as far as like my perspective of looking at these things, you know?
For sure. Really well said. I mean, it's a tough thing to wrestle with. So yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's just it, right? So if you know, again, it's like, even Steve, you've mentioned Jason Horsey a few times. It's like, I heard him when he was talking to Neil Kramer, saying like this, he's like, you know, I'm trying not to be more moralistic, but it's hard sometimes, you know, sometimes something just seems wrong, you know, like, bombing the fuck out of, you know, dropping, flying drones over children and dropping bombs on them. That feels pretty easily, I'm pretty comfortable saying that is wrong. You know, but if
it's not ground for impeachment, like a sex scandal should. You know,
but, well, what was Kramer saying? Got him. Why did you bring up that particular interview, Alan?
Oh, just to say, so here's someone, because you said he's a guy who's trying to bring up union, but I'm saying you could hear him sort of struggling with that, this idea where sometimes people will say there is no clear right or wrong, you know, it's philosophical fucking sand trap, right? I mean, that's what we're dancing around. It's like, if you say, you know, Jake Kotso can say, it's all about joy. And I say, well, what about a fucking drone, you know, killing a child? And he says, well, this might lead to it's a sort of the God works in mysterious ways. This might lead to something in the good, you know, down the road, that there is an expression of joy even in that,
the equation's balanced out somehow by that act, I guess.
Right. Or, you know, something like that. But, and then there's this really strong part of me that's like, no, man, it's inexcusable, you know? So, just sort of seeing these people smarter than I am, you know, your Jakes and your Jasons sort of struggling with that. I just use that as an example to say it's a really, really tough intellectual sand trap to dance around.
Sure. And I don't think either of them would say they have a definitive handle on it. I think that just embodying that helps them get closer to that. But they don't. Nobody has that knowing for sure. Like, we have a knowing about a very few things. That's not one of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess – yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to commend Kevin. I appreciate, you know, sort of, I think we're all kind of saying very similar things in the sense of, you know, hoping for this sort of expression or working towards it. And there's this sort of part of me that every now and then and just sort of says, you know, are we, sometimes I think, you know, like, what right do we have to make you get what I'm saying? Sometimes I feel like, what right do we have to make such a claim that, oh, okay, we know better. And then there's another time that I go, oh, no. Like, fucking, this shit is clearly wrong. Like, you know, when I say there's the danger in thinking we're the light and they're the dark, it's othering the other. I'm saying, and then there are times where, like, whether that's a trap or what, where I'm like, no, dropping bombs on children, I'm okay calling that wrong. You know, if that's othering, fuck it, so be it.
Right.
The more dissociative your personality is, the more that you're able to look at a bird's eye perspective and not feel as much emotion about that. But everybody's built differently. Like, I'm super disassociative. Like, I barely feel like I'm in my body. I barely feel like things are real half the time. So for me to get locked up on political issues or things like that, it usually comes down to, like, personally, I just don't like you and I want to just be devil's advocate. But the way that I view the world is very fucking amorphous, and it's always like, I don't have too many things that I want to fight for. That's why I've never voted for anything in my life. And it's just my personality type. But I could tell, like, that bothers you, Alan, and I respect that, you know, and it does show certain variables in people that aren't consistent. And I get that, you know, like, you're standing up for one ideologically way of thinking about life and the universe and stuff, but you're not really embodying it in a way that's fully real. Some of it seems synthetic, and I get that. It's just hard for me because I just think of things very vaporously, like always fucking dreamlike, you know?
Sure,
so,
yeah.
So because you see a corollary implicit in one of the sides, then does that feel like it negates the whole field or something?
No, I just feel like when there are sides and when there's those things going on, like even this conversation right now, I think I mentioned this the last time I was on an interview. It's like, if time is a constant, then no matter how much of it, no matter how much effort we put into consciously putting forward something, the dust of this conversation or this remnant of this conversation will eventually be erased forever. So
moving finger rights and having writ moves on.
Yeah, exactly. So that's part of evolving, right? Is realizing everything that we do, we have to let go of completely because it will be obliterated. So I think about that, I guess, more than most people. I probably shouldn't.
But where do you draw the line between? I mean, I think a healthier respect for impermanence is one thing, but it's, you know, there's a distinction. You'd make the distinction between that and a nihilism of like, eh, what does it fucking matter? Shit's.
I wouldn't say I'm a nihilist. Absolutely not. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. It's not.
But you said you believe in nothing.
No, I didn't.
I heard you, motherfucker. Got it on record.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from the SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune in to our other SyncBook Radio programs, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Synchronize, Pentimental, and Sync Quick News. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.